That's Ed Sheeran saying, I'm a mess. And apparently I'm a mess today because I have jumped the gun. We are not talking medical aids just yet, but the discussion will take place next week. In the meantime, make sure that you are making your appointment with your financial planners because, like I said, window period, but more on that next week. Today, in fact, we are wrapping up another important, pertinent conversation, something that you should be planning around. And of course, as always, it is Shannon Clark joining me in studio today once more. Shan, lovely to have you as always. And we continue the discussion and wrap it all up with a neat bow with regards to making the most of our money investment-wise.
That's it, Leah. And sorry for scuttling your plans a bit. But I felt that we left something hanging in the air finishing last week, or perhaps not finishing last week. And, I spoke last week what we kind of left off about the habit that people have of chasing performance. Mm. And I just want to open it with a quote from the investment sage himself, Mr. Warren Buffett. Mm-hmm. And that is, the investor of today does not profit from yesterday's growth. And that is something that we really need to get our head around.
Okay.
And then the usual legal disclaimer that we see on all documents in the financial services industry relating to investments, and it's there for a reason, and that is past performance is not necessarily indicative of future results.
Yeah.
And it's a reason why that legal disclaimer is constantly flouted, because that is a fact. And that's something that I want to expand on today, is this habit of chasing performance.
Okay.
And the reasons why we do it, FOMO, fear of missing out. In other words, you hear about these things happening, they're doing well, so therefore you want to buy them. It's also this in-ground defense mechanism where, hang on a second, you know, mine's not doing well, therefore I've got to get out. It's that human nature again. So it's these two opposing forces that as investors we're constantly battling with, and that is fear and greed.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And remember, let's come back to it and remind ourselves, investing is simple but not easy, and it's about having the right habits as opposed to having exceptional skills.
Okay.
And the habits that we talk about is picking a strategy and sticking with the strategy, not digressing from that strategy. And I just want to give some examples of where chasing performance has been shown not to work. And this is going back to my early days, when I first joined the industry in the late 90s, 2000s. This is research that emanated from them from then and is still as pertinent today. And sometimes it actually seems quite counterintuitive. And it was some interesting research where they looked at investing, where they said, right, let's take an investor who's constantly selling and buying the top-performing unit trust fund.
Okay.
So they constantly chasing performance, buying the top performer, buying the top performer, buying the top performer. They then said, okay, let's have a look at a situation where they're constantly buying the worst performing fund.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Looked at another scenario where buy the top performing fund, keep it and hold it for the entire term.
Okay.
Buy the worst performing fund, keep it and hold it for the entire term. And then Mr. Average, buy the average fund and keep it for the entire term.
Oh, this is interesting. Yeah. I can't wait to hear.
And now you think, okay, out of that, who was the best performer and who was the worst performer?
So, I'm going to try and give you an answer based on what I've learned in the past 20-odd episodes. And I'm either going to go with Mr. Average who bought and stayed, or the man who bought low and stayed.
Okay. Well, that's kind of where things pan out, but not quite. So the winner was Mr. Average. In other words, mm-hmm. the guy that bought the average unit trust from day one and held it for the entire term. That buy and hold strategy achieved a growth over a 10-year period of 258%.
Sure.
Okay. So in other words, that's where they ended up. All right. The guy that bought the loser, in other words, the worst performing fund at the beginning of the term,
yes.
and then held it for the entire period, achieved a return of 122%.
Okay.
So substantially less.
Yeah, substantially less.
The next best was the guy that bought the top performing fund at the beginning of the period and then just held it for the entire term. He did 108% return.
And he is still lower than the worst guy.
Exactly.
Hey.
Okay. The person that was constantly chasing the losers then comes up next with an 83% return. And the person that's constantly chasing the winners was the bottom of the pack with a 76% return.
That doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense to the person who thinks, okay, I'm obviously just going to try and stay with the best. And that's what a lot of us waste a lot of time and clearly money as well doing.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, there are various reasons for why that strategy doesn't work. One of them is the fact that you are selling out at the bottom and buying at the top. So you're selling at a discount and buying at a premium price. You know, it's stuff like that just manifests itself. Now, you can say, okay, this research is old. This is going back to the 90s, 2000s. But it's research that happens on an ongoing basis.
Okay.
And the same results come out. Morningstar put out some research at the beginning of the year. Similar sort of thing. Where they said, right, let's look at guys that are buying the top performer. And we're now looking at recent research going back 10 years, okay, from now. And as opposed to somebody staying invested in their average fund. And again, a difference of 58% for a 10-year period, current data. Vanguard put out similar research, Vanguard being the biggest unit trust company in the world.
Okay.
Same statistics, same numbers. And again, I'm going to come back to giving some real pertinent data now with existing client portfolios that I have. Looking at some of our high equity balance funds that clients are invested in. And in March this year, I had a review with a client, and one of the funds that they were invested in had a return. Now, bearing in mind, we're talking short-term numbers, and we really shouldn't be looking at short-term numbers, but just to illustrate a point.
Okay.
Where the fund was actually down at the beginning of the year, in March this year, 2.85%. So it was at a loss of 2.85%.
Right.
So, you know, what happens with a lot of people? Hang on a second, it's a loss, we capitulate.
I need to sell.
Okay. 6 months later, looking at the same 1 year's return, that fund is now sitting at 8.52% return.
Sure.
Okay, so if that person had capitulated, bearing in mind we're in a declining market, that fund still did a positive return.
Yes.
And that's the other thing with the investors must realize. Growth doesn't come in a straight line.
Mm.
It comes in times of overperformance and underperformance.
And it averages out historically, as we've seen.
Correct. Now, if we look at a number of these balanced funds with long-term histories, and you look at their long-term numbers, they are all within the same ballpark.
Mm.
They are all within a half a percentage point of each other. Their mandate is to beat inflation by 5%. Even in the current environment, they are still achieving their target.
And your balance fund is basically where Mr. Average would have put his money.
Correct. So these are high equity balance funds. In other words, this is somebody that can take a little more investment risk. Remember in our last discussion, a high equity balance fund can hold up to 75% in shares.
Okay.
All right. So, and we spoke about that number where they achieved over time 15% per annum.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so this is what people need to realize, is buy and hold. Don't get dissuaded by the marketing gimmicks that are out there.
Yeah.
These companies have wonderful marketing machines. They appeal to the fear and greed in all of us.
Mm-hmm.
And no, we mustn't fall for it.
Essentially, it's a behavioral problem.
Exactly. It's about those habits, not the skills. Okay, you've got to strip out the behavior. So how do we do it? What is the important thing? The important thing is to build a portfolio of diversified assets,
mm-hmm.
and the mix of those assets should be that they could achieve the required return to meet your long-term objectives,
mm-hmm.
but at the same time that are aligned to your temperament to take on investment risk,
yes.
to ensure that you're going to remain invested,
yes.
over time.
And it's that simple. It's not easy.
That simple.
But it's that simple.
And let that compounding machine work for you.
Now, Shan, you opened up the discussion with that quote, you know, where historical returns do not necessarily reflect that of the future. And obviously, we're looking historically to these facts, but then basing our decisions for future returns. is that then not kind of a paradox in its own?
So in terms of that, the investor of today does not profit from yesterday's growth. Mm. We're talking about short-term numbers. But when we zoom out and we take that long-term view, one thing we know, over any point in time in history, equities are the asset class that is going to give you the inflation beating returns. And that is one thing that we constantly need to remember.
Mm-hmm.
But that growth does not come in that straight line.
Mm-hmm.
That's the important thing.
Sure.
Overperformance, underperformance. Remember, we spoke about the funnel of probability or the variability of returns at any point in time, where a high equity growth fund could be up as much as, I think it was 38%, and down as much as 17%.
Yes, I remember those
over
numbers.
Any rolling 1 year period. But the further we shift that out, the less that variability becomes. And that is, we need, as investors, we need to keep our long term focus.
Mm-hmm.
That's the important bit.
And it's hard to do that without an accountability partner. And that's really what we keep coming back to as well. In terms of financial advice services versus product, and having the right financial advice to know and be confident in that strategy. Because at the end of the day, like you said, again, not easy, but simple once you have that plan in place.
That's exactly it. And again, very often, that's my role as a financial planner. I'm not there to help clients pick the winners.
Mm.
I'm not there to help clients time markets. I'm not an asset manager. I'm there to sit with a client and develop that robust strategy that the client is going to stick to over a long period of time, ensure that they follow the right habits. In other words, they are investing enough, that they remain invested.
That they're budgeting.
They're budgeting. Okay, you've been listening. All right. That they're not drawing too much income. These are the things, this is the role of the financial planner. And at the end of the day, to remind them constantly of why we have the strategy in place and to stop them doing silly things.
Yes.
And, you know, it's human emotion. When markets take a downturn, you want to do something about it. It's ingrained in us. And the important thing is to be reminded that Mr. Client and Mrs. Client, nothing's changed in your long-term strategy. Therefore, we don't need to make any changes. The time we do make changes is if something has changed with their long-term strategy. Something's changed in their life.
And those changes could be the death of a loved one, the birth of a child,
a divorce, a plethora of things. Those are the kind of things that should catalyze conversations that we then interrogate the strategy to see that it is still applicable and, if necessary, make changes.
So in actual fact, if you have your financial advisor on speed dial, please remove them right now, because in actual fact, as far as investments go, you won't be needing to contact them all that much, if anything, just to talk you down from the ledge. I do think that, Shan, in these last few conversations, we've had so much data that all points to the same direction. Have that strategy, let compounding do its magic, and just control your behavior, really. That is the summary.
Exactly. Have those habits, stick to those habits.
Shan, thank you so much. I do look forward to next week's conversation. Can I confirm on air that we'll be chatting medical aid next week?
Okay, so what we're going to be talking about, we are heading now into the final stretch of the year. And let's just zoom out a little bit in terms of what we've been talking about investing, and let's start to talk about what clients need to be perhaps paying a little more attention to in the final stretch towards the year and in terms of wrapping things up for the year.
Well, you heard it here on Radio Life and Style. Join us next week once more at 10:30 for Wealth Wednesdays. And if you have been inspired to take action, please do get hold of Shannon in your own personal capacity, as we have clearly pointed out here. If anything, a financial advisor is definitely somebody that you can count on to help you make the right decisions when you are in doubt. You can get hold of Shannon at shannon@wealthology.co.za. And of course, tune in next week. Shan, until then, have yourself a wonderful week.
Excellent, Leah. Thank you very much.